clients time and time again, that's what keeps you coming back. Visit jackandrea.com for more information.
This is WGTD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the Internet. The show is hosted by Felicia King of Quality Plus Consulting and airs the first and third Saturdays of every month.
Good morning. You're listening to Breakfast Bites, and I'm Felicia King. Today's show is going to be an interesting expose on a website that you may actually want to use, depending upon how much you want to research yourself and your family to find out how much of your personal information is out there on the internet, effectively free for the taking. Yeah, so maybe I've just piqued your interest. And then I'm going to talk about why using your cell phone for SMS-based authentication, otherwise known as a form of multi-factor authentication, is a very risky proposition. So let's first get started. The website I'm going to tell you about is called truthfinder.com. It is interesting in that it is a better value than many of the resources that are on the market for being able to do kind of a public record search on yourself or a quasi background check on yourself. Now, clearly, there are some things that it's not going to find, and I thought that these sorts of things are always very interesting to me in terms of finding out how much information is out there. And so you may choose to check out yourself and check out others. And this kind of goes into another whole element of a product that I've told you about in the past, which is called Delete Me. And I do strongly recommend Delete Me as a service. It's very cost effective, and they really do a great job of reducing your data as in public information records from just being publicly accessible in terms of like People Finder websites. I'm sure that you've all heard in the news recently that the level of vitriol has just increased dramatically lately. I mean, we've heard of what has happened to some media personalities where their homes have been targeted. Violent individuals carrying Molotov cocktails actually showed up at their home. And a Molotov cocktail is something that somebody could light up and launch at your home and literally burn down your home with you in it. So that is a lethal force situation, in my estimation. If somebody is threatening you with great bodily harm or injury, and because they're basically outside your home and it's a mob or a crowd of them, what option do you have in order to safely retreat? You can't. Where are you going to safely retreat to if they are a mob outside your home? So very scary stuff going on, and this is happening just exclusively because it is so dang easy to find your information on the internet. And TruthFinder is one of those websites that you could legitimately use in order to find out how much information there is about you. So I subscribed to this for a very short period of time, and you have to be very careful when you use any sort of a service like this, because they will use some misleading tactics in order to get you roped into, let's just call them add-on fees. So if you go to the website and you sign up, you can even go through a process that says, no, I just want to pay a one-time fee and I don't want this to be a subscription. Well, most likely you're going to be converted to a subscription anyways. And then unless you actively go in there and terminate the subscription before the renewal period, which is monthly, then you're just going to keep getting fees. So be aware of things like that. And that, in my opinion, causes TruthFinder, as well as many other websites that are like it, to have a scammy tone. And because I think it's rather scammy to not be upfront and honest about something being a subscription. The other thing I found in my analysis of utilizing this website was that it did not offer a complete criminal background check on someone. I specifically looked up people that I knew what their criminal background was, and well, in some cases I saw some of it, and in other cases I didn't see any of it. So that's an interesting facet. And there are also false positives. There are interesting, I don't know how it's happening, of course, but somehow there are these relationships being drawn between supposed acquaintances or, you know, potential connections. And I think it's, you know, it could very well be something like you had a particular address and then somebody else had that address. And now potentially you're seen to have potentially known them, and they may be a known associate of yours, you know, these sorts of things. But I think it's an interesting exercise if you're willing to go through the effort of doing a check on yourself and figuring out what all someone could figure out about you. It might be worth your time and effort to check that out and kind of do a little assessment on yourself. But again, I do recommend DeleteMe as a really good service, and it's made by a company called Abine, and I've been using their service for years. It's very good, very cost effective, because there's just so much public information out there that really is not benefiting you in any way to have it out there. And in fact, I think it's harmful in today's day and age with all just too darn much information out there. It's so easy for someone to engage in swatting now. And let me give you an example of what swatting is and why it is, I mean, why people are just dying because it's happening. I mean, it's just been, I can't even begin to calculate how many times people have been killed because of swatting. And what it basically is somebody makes a false phone call from what they have set up as a phone number that appears to be a phone number that is terminus into your residence. Okay, so let's say they figure out what your cell phone number is, or they figure out what your home phone number is. And believe me, this is not hard. Okay, I mean, this is not hard, and this is actually one of the biggest reasons that I would recommend that you never, and I'm going to stress this again, never, ever, ever buy a phone number from a local phone provider like AT&T. And if you're going to get a cell phone number, try to get it so it's not in your name. I mean, just these things create such a personal human health risk for these numbers to be known. So take you through the scenario. Let's say the bad guy decides that they want to swat you just because they got a grudge. They don't like you. There have literally been people that have been killed because of swatting simply over a dispute in an online game. Yeah, I'm not kidding you. It's happened. And so the way that the swatting works is a phone call is made to law enforcement, typically a 911 call, and it's done in such a way that the police are led to believe that there are exigent circumstances for why they should do a no-knock raid on a facility. And they think they've got exigent circumstances, such as there's a hostage situation or there's a domestic dispute with a weapon, and, you know, this person is going to kill their family and kill themselves and so forth. And so, again, police are being misled, and they think that there are exigent circumstances that justify a no-knock raid with lethal force. And this is completely a fabrication. And the data that the police are going on is typically a false phone call that's being made that appears to be coming from either a cell phone owned by one of the people in the facility or from the phone line itself that is terminus into the facility. So from the police's perspective, they think that the phone call originated from that facility, so is therefore, you know, legitimized. Right? When in reality, the phone number, caller ID information was spoofed. And voices can be spoofed. There are VoiceBox alteration generator alters that you can be a man and have your voice over the telephone appear to be a woman's voice or a child's voice or something like that. So this is one of those areas where I think the society that we live in now, where police are, in general, they don't know who's in their community anymore. So as they're driving past a home, they have really no idea who lives there, what type of people they are, and these sorts of things. So, you know, they think they've got exigent circumstances, and then there's a no-knock raid, and it could be any time of day, and people are getting killed because they think it's a home invasion because it was a no-knock raid. So I actually know two people that this happened to, and fortunately they were aware of the fact that someone was probably going to be targeting them. So in one case, they had proactively contacted police about this topic. And so then police knew them and so forth and knew the situation. So it never got escalated to the point where it was a no-knock raid. In another case, they had surveillance and alarming systems that alerted them to the fact that someone was outside their house. And of course, their video surveillance then revealed that it was SWAT. And then they engaged with SWAT over a speaker microphone system and was able to de-escalate the situation by saying, hey, you know, whatever, I'm going to open the door and I'll come out and we'll work this out. So as far as SWAT was interested, concerned from that perspective, they didn't need to break down the door and do a no-knock raid. And of course, then they, you know, came into the facility and cleared it all and was like, okay, well, there's really no problem here. So this is a very disastrous situation that happens. It's not good for anybody. It's a waste of taxpayer resources, of course. The police have better things to do with their time. But all of this garbage is occurring simply because of the ease with which people's phone numbers are publicly obtainable. Yeah. Now, there's another nasty aspect to this, which is basically simjacking. Let me explain what simjacking is. I think you all know that you have a cell phone and the cell phone has a SIM card in it, or the cell phone has like a kind of a hard-coded SIM card in it in the case that it is a flip phone. So in the case of most smartphones, they have an insertable slash removable SIM card. In the case of a flip phone, it's just a built-in component. Now, this SIM card has an IMEI number. Now, this IMEI number is a globally unique number that is how a carrier distinguishes between one cellular termination point, meaning your cell phone, versus your neighbor's cell phone. So every SIM card out there has a unique IMEI number. Now, if you can convince Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, etc., to change the relationship between a phone number and the IMEI number that it is terminus to, then simjacking can occur. And simjacking is where your phone number no longer terminates into the IMEI that is embedded with the SIM in your phone. So therefore, if a text message or a phone call was to be delivered to that phone number, the phone call or text message would actually get routed to a device that is not in your possession. The bad guys have it. So where this is extremely dangerous in terms of simjacking is, you know, not only are you not getting your text messages and cell phone calls anymore, but the bigger problem is that you probably used that cell phone number as part of multi-factor authentication for something. It's a well-known fact that virtually everyone who has ever publicly posted anywhere that they had Bitcoin has had their cell phone number simjacked. Now, more recently, I'd say in the last 6 months, some of the cell phone providers like Verizon have put additional safety measures in place to try to reduce the risk of that. So if you haven't gone, like let's say you're a Verizon or an AT&T subscriber, and if you haven't gone to your account and set up a unique PIN, then you really should go do that right now. Because that unique PIN is that, it's kind of a stopgap authentication mechanism that can dramatically reduce, notice I didn't say it eliminates it, but it can dramatically reduce the risk of somebody calling the cell phone provider and giving them a sad, sorry song about why your phone number needs to be changed to a different IMEI, right? If you call Verizon, they don't know your voice. And remember, I just talked about how much information about you is completely publicly accessible. So now someone can pretend to be you. Do they know your zip code? Of course they do. And can they, you know, do they know your address? Of course they do. Do they know your birthday? Probably. I mean, so much of this information is publicly accessible. You know, do they know who your friends and family are? Yeah, actually, they probably do. All this information is very easy to publicly obtain. It's just, to me, I find it not only disgusting from a privacy perspective, but it's outright dangerous to human health that all of this information is publicly available and that the bad guys are just able to so easily get their hands on your information to destroy your life. So with regards to the simjacking, if they are able to get your cell phone number rerouted to a device that they have, then they can just start trolling accounts. Now, do they know what your email address is? Again, yes, of course they do. They know because more often than not, this information is actually publicly accessible. And in many cases, it's this combination that they're engaging in terms of publicly accessible information and information they've obtained on the dark net or the dark web. And that information is being gleaned primarily through the ubiquitous breaches that are occurring all of the time where, of course, your email address has been compromised. I mean, I'm just going to guarantee you it's been compromised and they know what your email address is. Even if you're the most private person on the planet, they still know what your email address is because it's been compromised in one system or another on the darknet. And so there's this, you know, these darknet databases have your name, address, telephone numbers, all of your email addresses, probably your medical records, probably your known associates. You know, I mean, just the amount of information out there is just absolutely staggering. So they know what phone numbers to go after. They can figure out what cell phone provider those are through. They can then play games to try to call and convince the cell phone providers to reroute your phone number to an IMEI that they're in possession of. Then they can just start trying to get into accounts that you have. Now, this is where this simjacking really hits pay dirt for them. When, let's say you've got an Apple account and your multi-factor authentication for your Apple account is to send a text message to your cell phone. So in that context, they can now probably get into your Apple account because they're going to engage in a password reset, or maybe they're just guessing what your password is based upon leaked passwords that were leaked in a database on the darknet. Yes. This is, again, one of those reasons why you cannot be reusing passwords. I hope everybody listening to the show understands that you must have a password management database, and it must be encrypted, and you must use a unique password for every resource that you access. So in the context that one of those passwords gets compromised and published to the dark web, then that password being breached cannot be utilized to authenticate into your LinkedIn account, your Apple account, your Google account, your whatever, Amazon account. You know, I go down the list and then basically create havoc on your life. So where this is, you know, where do we take this as a next step? Well, number one, stop using SMS-based authentication for multi-factor authentication if you possibly can. There are plenty of authenticator apps out there. There's a Google Authenticator, a Microsoft Authenticator. There are some paid authenticators, and they're all, you may end up having to use all three depending upon what resources it is that you're accessing. But the authenticator apps are much, much, much more secure because they're going over HTTPS to begin with, and these apps are associated exclusively with that particular device that you have at the operating system level. So if someone was to simjack you, then they're not able to gain access necessarily through that approach into your authenticator app. Now, you heard kind of some interesting inflection in my voice there with that, so let me explain what I mean by, well, you know, mostly they can't get it that way. So simjacking enables somebody to take your phone number, but there is a different risk that could expose your authenticator app contents, and that is literally just straight up cell phone hijacking. Now, cell phone hijacking has been around since at least as far back as 2007. I think I did my first kind of radio show expose on that particular topic either in 2007 or 2008. So cell phone hijacking has been around for a very, very long time. And it's not hard to do. First off, the government does it all the time using Stingray devices. And outside of that, of course, I would hope you're not so naive as to understand that criminal enterprises have gotten their hands on these Stingray devices as well. Then there's the whole element of somebody sending a maliciously crafted text message to your phone that compromises the operating system and breaches it, therefore, thereby giving them remote access to the microphone, the camera, and of course, keystrokes on it and content. There have even been records of how every iPhone that's out there is backdoored by a particular chip embedded in them that the Chinese government has surreptitiously installed. So if you have an iPhone, you very well may be at risk of that issue. And this is not unheard of. You've probably heard in the news, and I think we covered it on a prior radio show recently, but this element of the, there are many examples of how, because much of this electronics is being manufactured in China, various organizations are getting their hands on the supply chain, interrupting the supply chain, and embedding backdoor information stealing chips with phone home technology into these things. Now, Amazon had hired a company to evaluate the motherboards that they were going to put into their servers, and this evaluation company found a chip on the motherboard that shouldn't have been there according to the specification. And it turned out to be one of those backdoor chips. So this stuff is happening. And that is exactly, you know, so there's a variety of ways in which your authenticator app, though it is dramatically more secure of an option than SMS text messaging, but still there are ways in which the authenticator app itself and its contents could be compromised. So my suggestion to anyone who actually really deeply cares about security is twofold. Well, maybe threefold. Number one, yes, use an authenticator app, but do so on a device that does not have a SIM card installed in it. Yep, that's going to suck, right? Because that now means you have to have two devices. Well, maybe it does. Maybe security is that important to you. Secondarily, try to just avoid using SMS text message based authentication for multi-factor authentication at all. Just try to eliminate it. Now, granted, you're probably not going to be able to completely eliminate it simply because of the fact that not every multi-factor authentication system out there supports an alternate method other than SMS. The SSA.gov website is a prime example of that. In fact, several years ago, they had attempted initially to do some more sophisticated multi-factor authentication until that whole attempt to actually have security blew up in their face because a bunch of people cried about how difficult security was. You know, it was pathetic. I remember covering that topic and saying, you know, hey, kudos to SSA.gov for trying to have some real security, but then they got all this pushback, so then they had to turn it off, and they finally came back with the lame version of security by saying, oh, okay, well, we'll do text messaging. Well, the better option out there is text messaging to a number that no one knows about. And that is not, yes, I'm going to repeat, is not tied to any SIM card or any IMEI number or any cell phone provider. And the reason this is absolutely beyond all levels of critical, if you really care about security, is because there are sneaky, I mean really, really sneaky stipulations over the traceability of cell phones. And this is all because of governmental overreach and governmental over-regulatory things. Now, you know, if you go into a cell phone provider, they want your driver's license. You know, you can't get a prepaid cell phone without exposing all of your personally identifiable information. It's like, geez, all I want to do is have a phone number and make some calls. Give me a break. Nope. Well, because of governmental regulation, doesn't matter if you're prepaying. Nope, they've got to have all of your identity. And if you want to have a cell phone that isn't completely 100% prepaid, now they are going to have your social security number. Yep. So what has now happened is that there is this deep tie at an informational level in these ubiquitously accessible databases between this cell phone number and your personally identifiable information. So what this now means is this information is going to be breached and leaked. The only level of privacy you can actually really achieve is to utilize some sophisticated methods to gain access to a legit phone number that is text messaging enabled. And I say legit phone number because the problem is you can't use a Google Voice number. You know, if you're listening to the show and going like, yeah, well, I can just get a Google Voice number and that's text message enabled. Well, you might be able to do some like SMS substitution with that, but there is no system out there that actually thinks that a Google Voice number is a legit phone number because it's known to be a virtualized phone number. In fact, I'll take it one step further for you. Even a DID, a direct dial, Skype for Business, PSTN calling phone line that works like any other phone line out there, that is also going to fail the real legit phone number status assessment because of the fact that it